Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I'm Kiana, and I leveled up my business with Shopify. Once I figured out that Shopify was a thing, I never turned back. I can create a site with my eyes closed. Shopify thinks ahead of us, you know, and it thinks about the customer more than anything. Every day I'm thinking about some other new business, but Shopify is doing it to me because it's so easy to use. It's like I can't stop. I'm addicted.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.
Hi everyone, it's Gavin J. The best thing since bronze. And you're listening to the Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I welcome back Judy Cloten, Director of Happiness and Balanced Time on the importance of mindful leadership. Judy, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Doing great, thank you. Great to be back. Thank you, Gavin.
Oh, thank you for coming back. Judy, just remind our listeners a bit about yourself before you got involved in, you know, balanced time and you became director, etc.
Well, I have worked across two different industries predominantly. I started off as an engineer, and then I moved into the world of communications, finding engineering quite a challenge in the space of being moved from job to job, very similar to being in the army when you're a practical engineer, and that didn't suit my desires for my life and how I wanted it to pan out. But I was always really good at the comms side of things. I got put forward for all the public-facing roles. Was quite lucky to experience some PR firsthand. We were filmed by a program. You probably don't remember, probably too young to know, called How Do They Do That? Looking into some of the pioneering engineering of the time. And just thought, oh, I really like this world. And I transitioned from engineering into the world of technical communications. From technical communications, I over time developed a real passion for working in the space away from technology, but more in the space of health and environment and education. Through that and various senior leadership positions, I struggled with burnout. And found meditation as one of the tools that really made a difference to me, really shaped who I was and how I responded to challenges. And I wanted to do more with it. So I paused my communications career and I decided I would do something in that field. But what I did is I maintained my work in comms, chose to freelance essentially, but working in quite senior roles in a part-time capacity and build my training experience, initially in meditation, but it's now gone on to mental health first aid training, much more around people's mental health awareness, coaching, a whole broad range. Alongside this role as a communications consultant, a communications professional, working often at the right hand of senior leaders' positions, sitting next to a chief executive officer, advising them on points to do with communications, branding, sharing the culture both internally and externally, what I'm here to talk about is actually how I've brought some of those two things together. So I have a real passion for helping people, and through the power of meditation. But meditation is more than just sitting in a corner and chanting Om. It's an approach, it's a way of life that I think we can all learn from and experience some greatness through.
Brilliant, brilliant. So let's kick it off. I mean, what is mindful leadership and why does it matter?
So mindful leadership, I think some people call it different things. And it leans into what has been rebranded over many years, the space of corporate social responsibility, that the space of ethics as a leader. I have been part of a number of different teams that have talked about business ethics, and we all have probably experience of working for teams who we would describe as ethical and teams who we would describe as not. There's a sense of collective consciousness. We see all the stuff that's happening with B Corps, where they are challenged to be more than just a company designed for making money, where there is this thoughtful leadership behind the company. And I would challenge that all of those positions, there is an element of mindful leadership for them to succeed. And we're beginning to really see a difference in the world of those companies who do things consciously, ethically, mindfully, and those who don't. And as consumers, we are demanding more, as we should, from those who we buy for, those who we support. We don't just want the cheapest and the fastest. We want to consider, you know, how the staff are treated. What's the supply chain ethics? We've seen massive issues where companies' brand can be destroyed overnight through damage in the supply chain. And I would say, as it should be, you know, as we come to understand and challenge our views of what is right and what is wrong. So, yeah, it's quite philosophical, I think, the concept of mindful leadership, but it's also very practical. And I like to challenge the world that actually this is how we should be. Forget religion, forget spirituality. Actually, what makes us human and what matters as a human? And we're seeing some wonderful successes from some of the businesses that get it right. But it's really hard when you're a smaller business to set that up, you know, to make that right. You can feel lost in the doing. And that's what I really wanted to challenge and support. And it happened almost organically through some of the work that I've been doing in the wellbeing and mental health space, seeing this real need coming from the leaders in the space, seeing the businesses where there was this split between the staff wanting something and the leadership who don't, when you've got board members who are stopping the right things from happening. Yeah, we've just got to look at some big public examples of where you can say somebody like Thames Water, yeah, has been absolutely slammed in the press, whether or not they change their leadership style because of their priority to put the shareholders above the public, to not care about public health in terms of water quality, sewage in the rivers, violations and risks to public health. And they're probably an example of the most unmindful leadership, but they're being challenged about it. There are things that are changing. You can always argue that there's a bottom line that can make a difference. But my argument is that when you get mindful leadership right, you'll get both right. You'll get this ethical, considerate, environmental piece, but not at the stake of everything else. So you'll find a balance. And hopefully that balance is a step in the right direction to the positive change that we need to see in the world.
Is there ever compromise? This is talking generally now, but between your ground floor staff and leaders, do we ever see compromise happening in terms of how we move forward? Because I totally understand what you're saying. You know, you've got the staff on the ground floor. They feel we should be moving in one direction. Leadership feel actually no. And so do we ever see compromise at all, or is there a way forwards?
I think there's always compromise. There's always challenge. Sometimes that challenge will shake up and destroy the current way of doing things. That's why there's so much around this space of change management. Any change that you want to do for a business, for a team, is a difficult process. We as humans, most of us, I think, I forget the exact percentages, but it's over 80% of us have a natural resistance to change. We know it with technology when you see those curves of early adopters and how the rest of the world takes a while to catch up. And it's the same with any change. There's this small percentage who kind of go, yes, this excites me. I'm going to follow this, whether it's a change for the company or it's a change of technology or a change of thinking and doing stuff. And other people take a while to warm up to the idea, to the possibility, to how it can benefit them or the challenges, the things that they may have to learn to do things differently. So, yeah, that is the price of doing business, of working with people, of not just working in isolation. It's all about change management and it's all about behavior change. So a mindful leadership is a way of navigating that space of behavior change, more conscious of your own stress and the impact of that upon your team. More conscious of your own fears and beliefs and the impact upon that of you and your team. And, you know, some of the decisions that I would challenge that need to, given the world that we are in at the moment and some of the global challenges we are facing that need to be more considered than just about our little bubble. They need to be more thoughtful and more conscious.
Absolutely. What qualifies you to talk about mindful leadership?
So it's something I've learned through doing and through experiencing. So I like to think that when I worked as a senior manager, when I was in groundwork way back in my 20s, that I was a mindful leader for the team that I supported. Because I was part of a charity, I really cared about what we were trying to achieve. I cared about my team. I cared about the community we were serving. But that didn't have to be the way for only only somebody who was a senior manager within a charity. Some of the work that I did there was about championing change from, as it was labeled at the time, a CSR, corporate social responsibility perspective, and looking at this balance between the corporate social responsibility lip service and kind of what might be a team building day once a month, once a year, that, or once every 10 years that then never happened again, to a true engagement program that was really thinking about the responsibility, the ethics, the decisions of the company. And I championed a whole team that was about looking at how the charity could roll out projects to support different initiatives. So we supported a range of things from helping business improvement districts to helping different communities learn to talk to each other and ways to navigate differences, from where a business park might be dealing with graffiti from part of the local community and the challenges of just seeing it down to the council and building bridges between different disparate parts of communities, to then actually running whole environmental business change campaigns with some really amazing players in the field. I've worked with a number of fascinating individuals who really are champions in the environmental business space, many who've gone on to win great awards, and we work together for looking at how you can change. So some of the things were really challenging businesses like the airports authority at Heathrow, which you can say, well, there's nothing environmental about an airport, but how that as a business had to make particular decisions when they were allowed Terminal 5, and part of the environmental conditions were to make sure they considered their environmental impact much more than any other business was doing at that time. And then they were championed as seen as, actually, if they can do it in potentially one of the most polluting industries, why can't other less polluting industries do this and look at the change and what they've started? So it was things like the sensor lights in the toilets, which are now commonplace in most shopping centres, big public spaces that you go to. And they realised the cost saving and the environmental saving that happened from these decisions, that they were one of the first to champion these ideas. And then they were rolled out. So I was part of that team, and I got a real passion for helping, and I realized what I'm really good at is being the glue to it, being the facilitator that helps the right people come together to have the conversations, holding those conversations, not trying to be the expert, but trying to be the person who makes difficult conversations happen. So,
brilliant. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, Judy, thank you for that insight into your wealth of knowledge and experience around the subject that you know so passionate about in terms of leadership, etc. Can you give us an example of a mindful leader?
I think there are lots and lots of unsung heroes in this space. And the challenge is we hear a lot of those who are very good at their own personal PR. And marketing and promoting themselves, and they're perhaps not always as brilliant as some of the quieter ones. I would say almost all the people within leadership roles within a B Corp, the founders, will have the principles of mindful leadership very much core to why they set that company up, how they founded it, and choosing to go down that route. Famous examples, and perhaps a contentious example, would be people like Steve Jobs. One of my favorite examples is Mo Gordon, and his approach that is so considered to leadership, to happiness, and to how he brings his wealth of knowledge about not just technology, but grief and vulnerability, and bringing those together in such a human and passionate way to challenge people to realize actually the best leaders bring all their vulnerability and they share it and they captivate their community by the identification that creates, the way people are inspired by that vulnerability and strength within it. So I could probably think of loads more. Arianna Huffington is another one who I would say is definitely a mindful leader. Just realizing I hadn't shared any of the amazing women out there, of which there are many.
Absolutely. With a general election coming up, does mindful leadership have a place in politics too?
I wish it did. It really should. And some of the debate and discussion I've seen on forums talking about our politicians and MPs have actually been arguing that this is what is lacking from all of the major parties and most of the people who come door knocking, is that the leadership that we're being presented with is not mindful. And I think that's why there's so much discontent within the public, not just with one party or another, but with the fact that the leadership we're being presented with seems to not consider the future beyond their own political gain. They don't seem to be, and without naming names, but I know we can all think of them very, very loudly, there doesn't seem to be much ethics in the current political climate. In fact, any MP that seems to be championed for ethics, risks getting shot by by members of the public, being attacked. And so people are afraid to speak up, which is awful that, it should reach that kind of dire situation. I think mindful leaders we've seen in the past, we've seen, real challenges approached, and not necessarily mindfulness without some of the unethical practices. Nelson Mandela, some could say an incredibly mindful leader, but some of his practices, were really challenging the norms, severe behavior change that did not happen completely peacefully. We are being challenged. I would love to find a way that we could all be more Gandhi, and be more peaceful, more considerate. And with the challenges of war, in the world around us, we just need to be more, and better, one of the biggest challenges for all leaders at the top of the tree to just managing two or three staff is the stress of that role. And I think one of the challenges is that our leaders are not addressing the stress within themselves. They are not looking at ways of managing that themselves. They are not parenting, because we are all parents to their communities that they nurture in a supportive and responsible way. In fact, you would argue if the politicians were parents, they would have been removed from their children a long time ago. I don't think there's a quick fix to it, but I really do believe if we could hear champions actually talking about this resilient space, this conscious space, more thoughtful space, we would start to see behavior change in a very different way. And I think one of the challenges with that is it's not yet attractive to be considered a mindful leader. There is a perception that somebody who is thoughtful and considerate is weak, when in actual fact, you've just got to look at the success of some of the B Corps. The opposite is true. These are companies leading by example, delivering real change from within. And that's what we need to see our politicians do.
Absolutely. I wish there was more world peace.
Absolutely.
I've had enough of this war thing. Honestly, it's getting quite unbelievable. I'm not going to name countries and leaders, but I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. It's just, I just wish people could just sit down and we could all just try and work it out instead of using violence and aggression, because all that leads to is death, it's very sad, really, what exactly does a mindful leader learn?
Well, I think there's two things. Is when we're looking, just to your point about war and aggression, if we look back to mindful leadership practices from years ago, it's a lot of the Japanese principles. I forget the full title, but I'm sure there's a book called The Art of War.
Art of War, yeah. It's always quoted in films, I find.
And some of the things, I confess, I've not read the whole thing, but I've seen snippets of it and had them applied, which are very much about this mindful space that you go into. It's core to a lot of martial arts training. actually, you know, it's a mindset. It's a place of peace and calm and resolve. And from that inner resolve, you can find the strength to fight if you need to, or preferably choose to walk away. And always recognizing that there is a choice within this space. And when we think way back to how these principles have been used in war, they are about recognizing the weight of this decision and the strength that comes from saying no and defending and negotiating and coming from a place of balance rather than that place of anger and fight and fear. And that's what I aspire to teach people, to support people with nurturing within themselves through the mindful leadership clubs and training that I facilitate, is helping people to step into that space where they can choose if they need to step into fight or if they can, if there is another way. And recognizing very often there is, and it's recognizing what you can say no to and what is not tolerated and what, frankly, we need to act on rather than this apathy, which is not at all mindful. Oh, well, I can't risk saying that because I might upset somebody. But if you say that, you could save so many lives. If you act there, you could make a difference. So mindfulness gets confused with the fact of, you know, meditation is seen as very zen, a very calming practice, which it is. But it's the reason I'm calling it mindful leaders is because it's that calm point of action. I've sometimes talked about it before at this point of balance that we have relaxation on, and we think of relaxation as being that that place just next to sleep when we're falling asleep at night. And the other end being fight, you know, going into war and literally punching somebody and aggression. And that's the two ends of the scale. But in actual fact, the truth is something completely different. The point of balance, that point of mindfulness, that point of meditative peace is being the weighing scale, being the hand that holds the scales and feels it tip either way and makes the decision which way to go. It's kind of the judgment outside of all that, neither tipped by the weight, neither affected by the judgment of it, but being able to view it much more objectively, taking a step back, kind of thinking of you being that support that's holding the scales.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're just going to do another quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, Judy, what do you aspire to do as a mindful leader yourself?
So, one of the things I aspire to do is continuously improve what I do myself, and to support others in that continuous improvement. I recognize that I don't get it right all of the time. Sometimes I think I don't even get it right some of the time. And that's okay. Yeah, that's part of the process. I think as a mindful leader, I aspire to really recognize the elements of leadership that are enhanced by mindfulness. So planning, visualization, stress management, that space that I was just talking about of non-judgmental decisions And you would say, well, every decision is judgmental. But if you can take away some of the weight of emotion that we carry around different decisions, if we can just look at the decision in the weight of certain things without being so blasted, just think of how you might respond to a nasty comment that somebody has made. If you're in a stronger, happier position, you will be less judgmental. There's a great quote from a chap, Matt Pepper, who's wrote a wonderful book on happiness, and he quotes that non-judgmental position about when you wake up and there's no milk in the fridge for your coffee, and you love a milky coffee. And when you're in a low place, in a judgmental place, in a high stress place, that no milk for your coffee can set you up, not just for a bad moment, but you kind of turn it into a bad day. Oh, that made that go wrong. And you turn one small situation into a bad day, might be a bad week, might be a bad, all because of no milk in the coffee. The mindful place, the considered place, comes from a space of greater happiness. And it's a space of, if you wake up all happy, you've had a great day the day before, you've had a brilliant night's sleep, you're feeling really revived, no milk for your coffee. You see that as an opportunity. You see it's, oh, great, I wanted to try that coffee shop down the road. Oh, this gives me a perfect excuse, an opportunity. Or actually, I'm going to use this opportunity to catch up with my friend, my colleague. I'm going to take them for coffee. Oh, I wouldn't do that otherwise. Actually, let's turn it into breakfast. This is a great start to my day. Do you see the difference? And I love that really simple example of his kind of taking us back to that non-judgmental place is when we are more mindful, probably happier, and we're able to make much wiser decisions on something very, very simple. And we often can then make the decisions, take the action, and to move that 1% forward. We see how that mindful leadership approaches is being used with athletes, where that 1%, probably not even 1%, makes for 200% improvement. It's not just 200%. A 1% improvement when you're an elite athlete is the difference between gold and not a gold. And it's realizing that incremental improvement in all of us is brilliant. It's what enables us to live happier, healthier, more fulfilled lives and make more of a difference in the work that we do.
The coffee and milk example is a good example. And it's not actually the milk and the coffee. It's just another thing that might be going wrong on top of all the other things that might be going wrong. And the brain just, all it does is, it doesn't matter what it's about. It's just stacking up. This is going wrong. This is going wrong. This is going wrong. This is, and so it all just adds up, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's why I love the whole mindfulness approach that kind of helps you reset that dial, kind of helps you take that breath and bring that dial of that's going wrong, that's going wrong, just as you articulated, to bring that dial back down. Yeah, boost the happiness levels up, boost the resilience levels up, and be able to kind of dial that back to be able to. And sometimes that action is strong, is powerful, but not always.
Sometimes it's about stepping back, isn't it? Just reflecting at the end of the day, just starting all over again. The next day you wake up, start all over again and just moving forwards, you know? Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, it's maybe easier said than done, but I think it's to do with practice. Because I have to do this day to day. I work in local authorities, very pressurizing. So there's loads of things going on. But every day, at the end of the day, you reflect and then you start again the next day and you move forwards. And I think that we can all kind of do that in our working lives, couldn't we?
Definitely. And it's like the old saying, this too will pass. Because sometimes we can get caught up in the sadness, in the anger of a particular situation, and that escalates. But contrary, sometimes we get caught up in the happiness. And in happiness that then becomes overexcitement, overexuberance. We see it with young children and their overexcitement and they can't go to sleep. And those listeners who are parents will identify with this sense that how can excitement ever be a problem? It's a problem if it stops you sleeping, if it's a problem, if it stops you focusing, it's a problem, if it makes you procrastinate, not achieve what you want, you know, at home, at school, in different ways. And again, it's recognizing that's okay. This too will pass, and finding a balance so that you can move forward, even if that's just to get a good night's sleep to set you up for a good day tomorrow. It's not dismissing the happiness. It's keeping that, but taking a balance on that over-enthusiasm, over-drama, and very much that's part of my personality, and learning to welcome that part of me and welcome where that's not always appropriate for certain people. So I need to temper things that might be misconstrued, and they're meant from a place of happiness and enjoyment and enthusiasm. But for somebody more introverted, they might find that as threatening, and see that as attacking when it's actually meant just to be fun. There's a balance to it all, and that comes from this stepping back.
What are the elements of leadership that are enhanced by mindfulness and meditation?
I mentioned a few already, and I think a lot of it started when I was working in pure communications and then starting to get this interest in well-being. And I see a lot of the creative roles were really being enhanced by a more mindful approach. So going into a branding meeting, a communications meeting, thinking about the customers who we want to speak to for a particular organization or brand, and taking a step back from the day-to-day of the busyness of doing, taking a step before we planned and leapt forward to breathe and to pause, bringing in different mindfulness, coaching, meditative, practical techniques of literally breathing, using visualization, seeing the possibility of how behavior change can be a good thing, not just a threat, trying to lift people above their fear of the unknown to how this could be a possibility for them. All these different techniques really coming together to make behavior change happen, communications. So right at the beginning with the planning, and then visualizing where you want that company to be. I mentioned stress management, building resilience of your team and building these core techniques that help you as an individual manage stress, help you be a more aware of different indicators within your team, helping use this to facilitate discussion. So even understanding the language that different people use, and I don't even mean foreign, not your native language. I mean the words that we use, no matter where you're from, will be different. People from different parts of the country, we know, have different words for different things. All of us have our own conversation, our own language of stress. Stress itself, for some people, and I would say increasingly more of the population with some of the stuff in the media, actually doesn't mean distress. It actually means a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of actually dealing with the day-to-day. For somebody else, it means actually I'm in crisis, help. But there's this subliminal language underneath that we're not addressing. Being more mindful helps us appreciate that, helps us understand the people who we manage, who we lead, who we support, and the subtleties of communication that can make all the difference to something being successful or something failing, and failing to engage and support people along the way.
Absolutely. You run a Mindful Leaders Club. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, it's something that I started, back pre-COVID, when I was running support in long-term wellbeing programs, stress resilience programs, and mental health training programs. And I was seeing that the people I supported would perhaps struggle after a period of time to maintain some of those initiatives, even if they had great programs, or they would be stumped by a particular issue or challenge and feel they had nowhere to go. Obviously, their first point was to come back to me. But what I realized from then, I set up some support groups for them to bring together other leaders who've been in a similar position. And some will be kind of manager level, some will be C-suite level, and bringing together them at the right level of leadership to have those discussions. We actually pre-COVID facilitated some of those face-to-face. We'd have panel discussions and bring people together in small groups supported by the experts to really look at particular issues, particular challenges, and raise things. And then with COVID, they moved online. And then I realized, actually, why should this just be a service that helps kind of existing customers? This is something where more people could benefit. And I started inviting people in to come. But what I really wanted to do was to make sure it didn't turn into another sales networking space. There's some fantastic networking and sales is important, but I didn't want the leaders to feel, oh God, if I come to this, I'm going to be sold at by 10 different people in the wellbeing space. So there was a conscious kind of self-selecting, keeping the cohort to be the right size businesses, the right size leadership level to make decisions. Actually, one of the leadership clubs that I run, all of the cohort are in financial leadership. So they're either the financial director or almost at that level, financial manager, but because of the size of the company, it could be equivalent to FD or CFO. And they obviously are united by finance, but they're coming together through productivity. Ran another group, and it was all operations managers. This was during some of the challenges of lockdown. So they were looking at things from a very practical way of, I need to keep this business operating. I need to keep it viable, but I need to do so in a considered and mindful way that considers what is safe, what is viable, what is possible, what stress is it putting my team under, what is it putting, and they come together with these particular themes. Others have brought together different organizations. So had one, and the cohort we brought together was all tech companies.
Brilliant stuff. Judy, unfortunately, we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Hopefully that gives you a bit of a flavour.
It does. Can you talk to us, just tell us briefly where people can find you if they want to reach out, use your services and that kind of thing at all?
Oh, well, I'd love to help. So my website is balancetime.co.uk. And if you follow the space, so /mindful_leaders, you'll find loads of resources on there and more details about how to get involved, how to find out more, and just see if it's right for you or your organization.
Thank you, Judy. You've been great. Thank you for all that information. Really appreciate it. And thank you to our listeners. You know, you can find me on Instagram at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.